Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Tyler Rowe, and today we are going to be looking back at some of our preseason takes, going over some of the calls that we had earlier in draft season and just kind of checking in on where we're at with a lot of those things. Because, hey, we are at roughly the midway point of the fantasy football season, or at least the fantasy regular season. If you're playing in a league that has one of those traditional sort of three-round playoff formats, then we're smack dab in the middle of it. So why not take a trip down memory lane and see how we did? But of course, we are also going to get into week 9 waiver wire picks. We're not going to completely abandon our normal format. We are still going to help give you some pieces of advice there. But before we get into that, we do have to start with our new opening segment that I introduced last week, Ask Tyler Rowe. And this week, Tyler, I just kind of wanted to ask you, in keeping with the theme of what we're going to be talking about, you know, sort of analyzing our preseason calls a little bit retroactively, how big of a bust, or like how long into the season does something have to go before you're really willing to take an L on a player or a perspective?
I think that you should be more willing to take an L much faster than you should be to victory lap, to take your W's. I think that's a very important aspect to this, where it's easy to look back and learn from your mistakes and claim the loss. To me, that's really what makes somebody a good fantasy football player. That's what makes somebody a good analyst, is that they're able to kind of take a look back. And what sticks out to them is not their wins, Herms. It's their losses, because that's where they're going to learn. And that's how you become a better fantasy player. Is you learn from your mistakes, you make some tweaks, you make some adjustments, and you refine your process, whatever that process is, right? So for me, it's important, in my opinion, to identify losses earlier on, own those losses, and figure out what went wrong so you don't make those mistakes going forward. Now, anyone can victory lap a win, right? And you and I both know. And people will take 1 week and they'll victory lap a W, dude. They don't need any
time. Oh, yeah.
They don't need any time at all. But I think, you know, you do need to see a full season. I think injury plays a really big role in wins and losses and how those are perceived. You know, it's one thing if you called a breakout of X player, but the person in front of him went down with a season-ending injury. Well, of course he broke out. He was given opportunity. He didn't earn it. And that's like one of the biggest things you really got to look at too, is it a loss just because of chance, or is it a loss because this player is that much better? Because in the end of the day, that is what you're arguing preseason, is that this player is that much better, that he is going to earn that volume and earn those opportunities. So for me, it's all about, let's identify the losses. Let's learn from them. You're not going to find me victory lapping on the timeline very often. I'll do it, you know, it's fun. I'll do it from time to time. But at the end of the day, the expectation, Herms, is that we should be right as analysts. It's people who do this, who get paid to talk about fantasy football. The expectation is that we should be right. And while it's okay to victory lap sometimes, we should be addressing those losses a bit more often.
I completely agree, and that's why we decided to do our big topic for the day. We both have written a ton of articles over the summer and spring time. We recorded a lot of these podcast episodes. We have a lot of stuff out there, and I am excited to dig into that stuff with you, but not before we get into some of our waiver wire advice for people coming up headed into Week 9. I will start by just going through the names of some quarterbacks that I think people should be looking to target, starting first with the veteran Joe Flacco. Look, these Bengals are absolutely cooking. Ever since he has taken over, it's revitalized the whole thing. T. Higgins is usable. Jamar Chase is seeing an ungodly amount of targets per game, and even the run game has gotten a little bit better. The whole Joe Flacco effect on the Cincinnati offense is something I'm going to be exploring deeper in my usage report coming out on Wednesday. But at any rate, it's working. He's still very much broadly available. I think people should just go out there and look at Joe Flacco. But if you're looking just for Week 9 streamers, just guys that I think have pretty good matchups, Sam Darnold going on the road to face the Washington Commanders. I think that's been a secondary that you can pick on for sure. I like his chances in that one. And then Trevor Lawrence is going to be facing off against a Raiders team that, oh Lord, nothing on that team is working, whether it's the offense or the defense. So I just think, hey, why not go after these soft matchups? Because, you know, look, injuries, bye weeks, it's all happening. Those are my three favorite options at quarterback. Tyler, if you have anything to say about those guys, go nuts. Otherwise, you do have a great list of running backs for us to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of times when we're talking about running backs, it's due to injury, right? And I was at the Eagles-Giants game, and that's where we're going to headline it. And man, seeing Scadabo go down with that injury live. And honestly, Jackson Dart's reaction to it live, I think, gutted me even more, because you could tell he was seriously you could tell Scadabo was seriously hurt. That's not what I was going to say. What I was going to say is you could tell it really affected Jackson Dart very deeply. And that it just sucks, because those two were the face of the franchise there for a bit, reinvigorated the Giants franchise, gave Giants fans a reason to go and tune into the games. Not saying they won't anymore, but Scadabo was a big piece of that. So unfortunately, with that dislocation, it's season ending. We'll put it at that. I don't want to speculate how long that's going to take. Fair to say his season is over. You know, Tyrone Tracy immediately comes in as somebody who's going to be the top of the waiver priority list for me, particularly at running back. We'll get to the losses and preseason takes, but I definitely think Tyrone Tracy is a talented back. Clearly, Scadabo is better, but Tracy, I think, is good enough to be like a low-end RB2 rest of season in your lineup. Singletary does not have the juice anymore, and I truly believe that because of his pass-catching ability, that Tyrone Tracy is a guy that we definitely need to be jumping in on. Does he kind of highlight the top of the waiver wire priority for you?
If he is available, I would say he is the bona fide slam dunk number one, but I just do want listeners to be aware of the fact 41.9% rostered on ESPN and 48% on Yahoo. So the odds are not extremely high, but it is still more than likely that he is available. In my opinion, if he is, I know we typically don't talk like big fab advice whenever we go over these waiver picks every single week, but I think this would be an instance where if you have a solid chunk left, with how good the team has been with Jackson Dart under center, I would be interested in spending a sizable portion of my fab to acquire Tracy.
Yeah, and if you're hurting a running back, I don't think it would hurt to just drop it all at this point in time, because you know he's going to be the starter. You know he's going to get some volume. So that's a big one. Quinshon Judkins, it might have been a shoulder or something like that. He obviously didn't finish the game. It was all Dylan Sampson. I feel like Dylan Sampson was the guy that kind of came in as his direct backup. Maybe he's a bit limited as a bell cow, but again, great prospect profile. Really love Sampson. He's absolutely a guy that I think we need to be targeting over Jerome Ford. And then Saquon Barkley came up limp. I watched it happen. I was like, dang, I hope he's okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I think things are going to be okay. There's nothing that I've heard that's a super concern, but what I wanted to point out here is Tank Bigsby. He looked good. He was looking really good against the Giants. He, to me, is a clear handcuff, a clear backup to Saquon Barkley. And I would venture to say that Tank Bigsby is like a top eight handcuff, and he's probably available in most leagues.
I would say so for sure, especially because like we've seen this team. I don't remember the last time AJ Dillon was even active on game day. It's pretty clear that like Will Shipley's, you know, doing some stuff, but a very, you know, much smaller role. And when it came time for it, we just saw a ton of Tank Bigsby. I think your assessment on that is absolutely correct. I would say, though, if I'm picking between the two possible injury replacement guys, I did see with Judkins, I think it was a sprained AC joint, and the Browns do have, I think, is it their bye week is next week? So I think that there is a slightly better chance of him being missing in action. So if I was just choosing hypothetically between Sampson and Bigsby, I would lean Sampson for immediate like priority help. But if you're looking more like long-term highest upside ceiling play, I think that argument would probably go toward Bigsby.
Yep. And then Bam Knight. We got some news. Michael Carter recently got cut from the team. Not too much of a surprise, but he was getting some run. I don't believe that Trey Benson, he can't return until week 10. So if you need immediate help at running back, it does appear that Bam Knight's going to be able to help you out next week. So if you're like in one of those pinches and you're like, yeah, I don't know if I can roster Tank Bigsby and hope something happens, but I really need some help next week in week 9, Bam Knight's probably going to be your guy. He's been getting some decent run, decent running back, but he should be getting a bit more here as Trey Benson cannot come back in week 9. And it's just going to be a Murray DeMercado, and I believe Bam Knight for the most part there, unless they're bringing someone else from the practice squad up. So I think he's definitely a guy that could get you some, you know, decent kind of holdover Band-Aid numbers there in week 9. And the last name I'll say is Spears. It's looking like a pretty gross split between Pollard and Spears. Spears is probably rostered in a decent amount of leagues compared to some of these names that I put out there. But if I have to pick one side of the split, it's got to be Tyjae Spears for the passing role.
Absolutely. You know, he's a name that we brought up in last week's podcast. Anybody gets those emails that go out every single Tuesday to FTN subscribers, he's a name I've mentioned as a waiver target in there as well. Definitely a very good call in that regard. I think that covers the running back position super well. And when it comes to wide receiver, there are some like deeper league guys that you could consider. But the main name that I just want to focus on is Jalen Knoll, the rookie with the Houston Texans, because as long as Christian Kirk remains out, Knoll's skill set and function within the Texans offense is the one that's most similar to Christian Kirk. And he's been performing pretty well with the looks that he has gotten over the past couple weeks. Now, they're also a team that's throwing out him and Xavier Hutchinson and Braxton Berrios and his fellow college teammate Jaden Higgins. It is a very confusing rotation cast of characters going on there. Nothing is guaranteed, but my main argument that I would put out, Tyler, and let me know if you agree with this, I think Jalen Knoll has the biggest likelihood to stick of these big performers from the Texans this past week because of the fact that, like, A, he just does a lot of the similar stuff to Christian Kirk. And I think Jaden Higgins, his skill set's a little bit too aligned with Nico Collins for my taste. But also, Kirk was acquired this offseason with 1 year remaining on his contract for a 7th round pick. Knoll, on the other hand, was a day 2 draft pick, a guy that you chose early as a rookie in April. So that is like kind of the core part of my logic for him being my favorite guy of this Texans bunch. Is that something that you kind of agree with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really good call. I, considering who's on the offense, I definitely think he fits a little bit better for what we're looking for. I expect the volume to be better as well going forward. So I definitely think that it is a good call to be able to at least get him on your roster. You know, in PPR leagues, man, I'm at least swinging, trying to see if it makes a lot of sense. It's also tough for me to kind of like drum up any kind of optimism for other wide receivers. Troy Franklin had a good week, and it looks like Mims had a concussion, so he could, like, you know, by proxy kind of have the starting role continuously. I know they've kind of flip-flopped who's going to be the other wide receiver on the Broncos. Got to look at who they played. I believe they played the Cowboys, like one of the easiest matchups out there. Everyone eats against the Cowboys. But, you know, with Mims out, you know, I think if I have to come up with like another wide receiver name just to kind of add to that, I think Troy Franklin's maybe worth the swing.
No, for sure. I definitely like that call. I think he is a pretty good name to add as part of that. The only other one that I'll just throw out before we talk anything about tight ends, if we have anything to say about that, would be, I think it's Shamiri DK. Is that how his name's pronounced?
I would have said it that way.
Yeah, so like he's starting to get like a few more looks over these past couple games, and it looks like his connection with Cam Ward is pretty nice. He's, you know, going out there for a lot of big play stuff. I don't know how much you can count on really anybody from the Titans offense, but as long as they're just trying to figure some stuff out, it's something that I'm willing to at least chase as we have to deal with injuries and bye week fillers and stuff. But much beyond that, yeah, I don't really have a ton of inspiring stuff at wide receiver either. But then, I don't know, at tight end, it's just names that we've been talking about for a long time. If Cade Otton is still out there, he's a big guy, as long as these Bucs receivers are hurt.
Almost had a touchdown last week with Otton, so it could have been a lot better. Want to throw that out there.
Otton is the number one on my list for that reason. I do really think that his opportunity is super cool. Then Fannin would probably be my number one pick, but he's likely rostered in a lot of leagues. But ESPN says it's only 54.9, and Yahoo says only 46. So technically doable. And then after that, Mason Taylor, you know, looked a lot better. Things are going his way, especially as long as Garrett Wilson is out. He is kind of the guy who's getting a lot of looks in that offense. But that is honestly it for all of my waiver perspectives, unless you have anything else that you want to throw out.
Nah, man. You know, the waivers aren't great this week. I think we covered the big names. Like, obviously, if you want to get a little deeper, you can always come over to FTN. We got a decent waiver tool over there for folks to come check out. But I think we named the names that people need to be focused on. Always available to kind of chat if you have some questions about that. But Herms, I'm pretty much set on the waiver side of things.
All right, sounds good to me. I feel similarly. And that means we can get into our quick break. And on the other side, we will get into our conversation, looking back at some of our preseason takes and just seeing where we're at with everything right now. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast, brought to you by FTN Fantasy.
Attention all FTNers. This is C.H. Herms from the Crossing Routes Podcast, here to let you know that our partners at DraftKings Pick 6 have a deal you don't want to miss. New DraftKings customers, this one's for you.
When you play $5 or more on your first paid Pick 6 entry, you'll get $50 in bonus picks instantly. That's right. You play $5, you get $50 in bonus picks to keep building your slips and take your shot at big payouts. Wow, wow, wow. Sounds pretty cool. Just use promo code FTN to sign up and start playing. If you've been thinking about trying Pick 6, now's a great time to get in. Just use promo code FTN to sign up, and all new DraftKings customers can play $5, get $50 in bonus picks instantly. It's that simple. So let's build some slips. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 bonus picks that expire in 14 days. Ends November 3rd, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back to the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I'm still Herms, he is still Tyler O, and we are now going to be looking back and doing some reflecting on a lot of the takes and perspectives that you and I have thrown out there. Like I said toward the beginning of the show, we both write a ton of articles at FTNFantasy.com. I haven't kept track of the number of episodes, but we've recorded a decent amount of these podcasts at this point. And obviously, you know, we go on other people's shows, we tweet things, we post things on social media. We have a lot of things to, you know, look back at and sort of reflect on and see where we got things right and where we got things wrong. So I'll go ahead and start with myself. I'll go through just a few quick bullet things, just things that I don't really have a ton of stuff to say about, but just kind of wanted to note. Back in May, I did come out with an article about guys that I was looking to avoid at their ADP cost. Devin Achane is somebody that I was very, very sure that the Dolphins were going to get a second back involved. Maybe as sort of like, you know, the more short yardage, short area hammer type. And that really has not been the case whatsoever. There have only been two instances of a Dolphins running back besides him getting double-digit touches in a game, and it was Ollie Gordon and Jalen Wright literally this past week because they were just so far up in that contest. You know, why not spread the ball around? Otherwise, it pretty much just has been the Achane show. I was also worried about his touchdowns possibly regressing, and so far he has 7 of them on the year, more than Saquon Barkley, more than Derrick Henry, and more than Kyren Williams. Another running back that I was fading was Breece Hall, was because of the whole Aaron Glenn saying he wanted to do a three-headed committee thing, and I just got like way too in my head about that. As draft season went along and his price went a little bit lower, I did end up drafting him more, but at the time he was going as RB13, and catching up to the present day, he's getting so many touches per game, 18.4 touch opportunities per game to be exact. So I kind of whiffed on those. Those are things where, you know, I think I just have to. It's one thing to speculate about a potential situation or a potential narrative and, you know, go down the what if avenue, but I think I just got a little bit too stuck on these hypothetical possibilities. And especially when it came to the Dolphins, like there were no indications like coming out of from like beat reporters saying that they were going to do anything like this, you know, throughout training camp, unless I'm mistaken. So I think, yeah, I think I overthought it. I got way too weird into those scenarios. And that's sort of the lesson that I'm learning out of that. You got anything to say about those, or do you just want to jump into some of the stuff that you have from your arsenal of preseason takes?
Yeah, for sure. So Achan, I was pretty much at market on. I didn't have a strong take. I don't have much Achan either, but I certainly wasn't calling for people to get rid of him. But Breece Hall, I was definitely in on. He's definitely had his ups and downs, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, if somebody who has a lot of Breece Hall, it feels better after last week. He put up a 30 burger. Oh, yeah. Like, that definitely feels good. But, like, he certainly hasn't been, like, a model of consistency. I do believe he's popped into the top 10 in terms of running backs on the year in terms of points. But prior to that, man, it was a frustrating ride. So I think this is definitely, you know, I think these are two players where the jury's not out, Herms. We talked about not taking things too seriously or L's too hard. Like, we'll see kind of how things are going. I think the jury's still out on both these players to say, I mean, Achan is looking good, but I think the jury's still out a bit here on these guys. To pivot into me, I was actually going to, you know, I was going to start at quarterbacks because, you know, I'll start off with some pretty big wins for myself at the quarterback position that I think are worth highlighting. I'll start off with one that we didn't talk about as much, but, you know, I was definitely a huge Drake May guy going into this football season. You know, I had published a lot of articles about if somebody doesn't think he's a top 10, top 12 option, you need to be buying. I was actively buying. I was actively drafting. I was taking him over guys like Jared Goff, Brock Purdy, Jordan Love. And that might sound silly now, but those guys were continually ranked above Drake May during this offseason. He was just a guy that I saw as like, hey, he finishes at QB 16 last year. Where and like any game he started 80%, you count that, and he was a QB 16, and to me that was the floor, right? It was worst offensive lines, some of the worst weapons we've ever seen. You get some better coaching in there, you get better weapons, you get a better offensive line. He takes a step forward, and things are going to happen. I mean, depending on how you're scoring, I think he's sitting right around like, and we have a game going on right now. It's Monday night, but he's going to be like a top five, top six quarterback on the year. So I'm really happy with the Drake May, kind of how we've turned out. He's been very important for a lot of my teams this far. So far, I should say. So honestly, like love the Drake May call for myself, somebody I really liked and kind of saw the Patriots ascending in some ways. And it's great to see them actually do it. And Drake May being a big piece of that.
Well, especially considering that, you know, outside of Stephon Diggs, and I'll give Kayshon Boutte some credit. He's really been coming on as somebody that he has pretty good rapport with. But this isn't necessarily a group of weapons that any of us are going to write home about. You know what I mean? I do think it is very impressive what Drake May has been willing to do this year. And you have been spot on about that. We've got it on wax. If you go back and listen to those episodes from the summer, your boy Tyler Rowe, he was on that. You were also a lot on Jackson Dart. And I think more so you, but that is something that I think we both definitely got right. I went back and listened to that episode. Mind you, it was our first episode of the Crossing Rods podcast where we talked about our favorite rookies because it was that time of year rookie draft was going on. And I know at least one of the things that I mentioned was the fact that where he was going in drafts reminded me a lot of the opportunity cost of like a Bo Nix, where even though he was a quarterback picked in the first round of the NFL draft, people still kind of faded him a little bit, and it just didn't make a lot of sense to either of us. And I mean, obviously, it'd be cool if Malik Nabers was still healthy, especially now after this past weekend. It would be even better if Cam Scadabaugh was also still healthy. But so far, so good, and I think that that has just ended up being a massive dub.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Jackson Dart, I believe, is a top – six top. I mean, him and Drake May, I think, are top six quarterbacks. We'll have to see how Mahomes is going to be in there anyway. So I think it's pretty much cemented that after week eight, halfway through the season, if you look at points per game released from Jackson Dart since he started, he's been a top six quarterback, and Drake May is a top five quarterback. You know, I didn't necessarily expect to see Dart as soon as we did. It made a lot of sense after we saw Russ play, because my thought was it was everything was positive about Jackson Dart in the offseason. And then they named Russ the starter. I think it's just your classic kind of like old curmudgeon-y football people. Like, oh, he's the veteran. He knows what he's doing. We got to play the veteran and the rookie needs to sit and earn his keep. But in my head, I'm just like, they can't keep rolling Russ out after a couple games, man. So Jackson comes in immediately. And I think you coined it where he's a scooter. He scoots so well, man. Like if he's not rushing for 50 yards, he's rushing for a touchdown, dude. And, you know, is he getting 300 yards passing every game? No, but you also have to look at his weapons, man. He's arguably the worst wide receiver room in the NFL right now, you know, respectfully, but like Slayton and Wandell Robinson, Those are not your 1-2. That's like a 3-4 on a good offense and a good wide receiver room. You know, yeah. I think his tight end room still kind of working itself out. Now he doesn't have Scadabo, but from what he has to work with and to be able to be a locked in top 12, I'd even say top 10 quarterback rest of the season, you just got to respect what he's about, man. He was the QB1 for me the entire process. I have articles that I wrote in March about ranking him above Cam Ward. Pretty clearly that he is my QB1. And Cam Ward, I continually have Cam Ward ranked as my like lowest quarterback in my ranks every single week. And now I don't necessarily think that has something to do with Cam Ward's ability. It has a lot to do with the team. That was baked into it, man. So, man, feels good to be right about Drake May. Feels even better to be right about Jackson Dart. I'm glad if you're listening and you're able to kind of grab Jackson Dart and get him there. There's definitely better quarterbacks to roster than Jackson Dart. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, man, he's consistent. He's getting you at least 20 points a week, and that we love.
Now, before we get into another one of yours, I do just want to ask, we do cover some dynasty topics here on the show. Generally speaking, where would you be feeling about Jackson Dart, just in the grand scheme of the quarterback landscape? It's okay if you don't have like a super specific answer or anything, but just like, I think we've seen enough that there's a certain point where obviously, like, I think if you're putting him like top 3 in dynasty, I think that's maybe a little bit too much, but there's definitely a certain spot within the top 10 that I think is respectable. I'm just curious about where that is for you.
I just did my dynasty ranks, man. So let's pull him up and let's have a little conversation about this.
Let's go.
I moved him to quarterback 10. So he sits right behind Justin Herbert and Drake May, but right above Dak Prescott and Bo Nix. So
I can see that.
Yep. So it's basically like Drake May. I have Drake May ahead of him. He's, you know, I don't have to make the case for Drake May. Justin Herbert, when given the opportunity to sling the ball, he's looking damn good, man. I can't take anything away. You know, Dak Prescott, Cowboys offense is rolling, but he is a bit older with a lot of injury concern, but I do think Dak's a good asset for a while. And then, you know, Bo Nix, a little sketchy here or there, you know, like he could score 30 points in the fourth quarter and put up a bunch of points, but it is kind of hit or miss from the Nix side of things. So I think you can make an argument for Nix over Dart, and I don't think I'd fight you. Same thing with Prescott. Honestly, Mayfield as well, but I feel really comfortable ranking Jackson Dart ahead of both Caleb Williams and Jordan Love at this
point. I mean, honestly, Sam, especially with Caleb, like the ceiling is awesome whenever he does flash it, but there were several weeks this season where I started him in lineups thinking that it was going to be a lot more, even when the matchups were good, just disappointing us. And honest to God, it's ruining my home league season. It's a huge part of the reason that one's not going super well. But
half the games, he's not eclipsed above quarterback 18. He's been quarterback 20, 24, 27, and 18 in half his games. That's not good, man. We don't want that. We need steady. We need steady at the very least. And his floor to ceiling is just not what you're looking for.
It's so bad. It's so bad. Okay, why don't we go ahead and shift over back to one of your bigger perspectives or takes and checking in on one of those now. You got another one that you want to throw out there onto the table?
Yeah, so I do want to say this one really quickly before I jump into it is like I was really far off. I remember I told you this, but I'm not a JJ McCarthy fan. I didn't think JJ McCarthy was going to be very good. I was saying sell JJ McCarthy. I was very questioning this whole Vikings offense while everyone is calling JJ McCarthy the next Burrow. I'm not taking a W on JJ McCarthy yet, to be honest. Like, he has dealt with some injury. We can make jokes about the soft benching all we want, but he still has a half a season. If JJ McCarthy comes back and kills it in the second half of the season, you know, I might look bad at this point. I'm like, that's what I want to kind of hammer home. And I was getting to that at the beginning of the podcast where I think some people, like I said, fade JJ McCarthy. And I think some people would be like, you should victory lap that. But for me, that's not a victory lap because he's been hurt. Like, we haven't really got to see him play. And for all intents and purposes, it's kind of like his rookie season, right? I mean, he has more time, obviously, with the team. But in terms of just getting the reps in NFL game, like, this was kind of his rookie season. So I'm going to, you know, pause and wait a second here. And, you know, if he kills it in the second half of the season, maybe takes the Vikings to the playoffs, maybe, you know, they're able to, you know, turn in a really good fantasy season, I could still take the L, but I mean the L here. So I'm not willing, like, just to really hammer home my point at the beginning of the show, the top of the show, is I'm not willing to take the victory lap of the W on JJ McCarthy. Just wanted to throw that out there before I go to the next player.
Oh, definitely. Same reason I'm not taking the full L. And when I aggressively ranked him, I think it was QB 14. And I had that whole thing about how I believed in the Vikings offense and whatever. And there is a part of the Vikings argument that I will highlight later as one of my victories. That's like sort of associated to this, but we'll have plenty of time for that. But yeah, you're not taking the W. I'm not taking the L. We've barely seen him. That is what it is.
I mean, I think the guy that I would probably, you know, shifting to running backs and probably shifting to a pretty big L of mine, man. I was on Team Tyrone Tracy over Team Scadabo. I didn't want to ruin it because we talked about it at the top, but I definitely was thinking that, you know, Tyrone Tracy was more dynamic, that he would at least keep the pass catching role. Now, I will say that Scadabo really kind of took off when Tyrone Tracy got hurt, right? That played a role in Scadabo getting that role, but he was healthy and Scadabo held it as a bell cow. So I got to, you know, take my hat off here. You know, a lot of people were telling me that Scadabo, you know, was better than he was, and I just didn't see it. You know, I was saying, oh, it's day three capital, but it was a strong running back class. He could have been a day two pick in other drafts. I wasn't really necessarily taking a lot of Tyrone Tracy, but I mean, I was fading Cam Scadabo in rookie drafts and in redraft, and he was pretty cheap. So just, you know, Cam Scadabo's hurt, but I will take the L on Cam Scadabo as a guy I should have been touting and drafting earlier on, even though we're going to see Tyrone Tracy the rest of the season. I feel good about saying that me fading Cam Scadabo was bad process.
And like in a world where his foot didn't end up being pointed in a direction that it's not supposed to go, the workload that he was getting per game was rather impressive, and how effective he was on those touches as well. I didn't end up with a lot of him either. I think I maybe had one dynasty share and I already traded it away. So I didn't get on a ton of that either. Definitely one of the bigger whiffs from the two of us. I feel very similarly about my huge optimism that I drummed up for Ken Walker III. I was so sold on the whole Clint Kubiak offense and how they were going to do things with this, you know, different scheme and how it was really going to change things. And I've covered it multiple times in weekly usage reports that have come out on the website. But basically, I kind of thought the whole preseason touch distribution was just them doing it to give different guys some run. Like there were definitely games where when Walker was out, what was that backup's name? I think George Halani or something.
Yeah.
Like he would get like 10 or 12 carries a game. And like, and we would consistently see like multiple backs get a bunch of work. And there were a lot of very sharp people who kind of looked at this and used that as a reason to tout Charbonnet. And I thought that that kind of made sense. It definitely elevated his value of being like a handcuff with potential standalone value to me. But I did not even remotely think about how that was going to potentially affect Ken Walker's ceiling. And I had him, I want to say it was as my RB9. RB9. I'm looking back at our notes from when we did that podcast series. Yeah, dude, I just woof. But sometimes the preseason does actually give us a lot more hints, and I didn't pay close enough attention to it or look into it deeply enough.
Yeah, I mean, I was on Ken Walker. I drafted in some places, so I didn't have him ranked as high as you, but I will share the L. Was not a fan of Charbonnet, and the team is a fan of Charbonnet, so we're good there. I do kind of want to take a little bit of a victory lap, which I don't think is necessarily a full one yet, but man, I was low on Ashton Jeanty. I didn't draft him absolutely anywhere. I had him ranked as my running back six, I mean, behind Christian McCaffrey, which, again, sounds ridiculous now, but that was a hot, fire-hot take to have CMC above Jeanty in your preseason rankings, man. So I had concerns about his ability to play at the NFL level, which honestly, that might be a little bit of an L, but I think in part I got kind of lucky because I thought the Raiders would be decent and they're not. The offensive line can't block. Geno's done. There were some flags for sure, but I think just being lower than consensus on Jeanty, where I have over 15 fantasy teams and he's not on a single one of them. My best ball shares are under 5%. Just a guy who was a complete void for me, considering he was going so high. I just thought there was no room for error, and that's where I'll kind of take a little bit of a W, is I just thought that where people were drafting Ashton Jeanty, there was no room for error, right? Everything had to go his way for him to finish as a top three, top four back, where he was consistently and in the consensus of being ranked. So I look back and being like, all right, maybe I have GT only 2 to 3 spots lower, but when you're talking that high, that's substantial. So I just saw too many kind of like red flags, maybe orange flags, where people are betting on everything going right for GT, and I just didn't want any part of it. So halfway through the season, man, that one does feel good. Although I don't enjoy seeing him not do well. I mean, he's, you know, borderline RB1, maybe high-end RB2. I don't love to see it, but definitely, you know, kind of feel good halfway through the season to be like, man, a couple things went wrong, and this is exactly what happened.
Yeah, you do have to always be very careful when it comes to great player, not so great team, especially because I remember during draft season, Gentry was consistently going around like the 8th or 9th pick overall. Like you said, everything kind of had to just go in the pro column, checkbox for it to really sail to the moon. And it just didn't really work out that way. And it's similar logic that I applied to fading Nico Collins. He was actually going like roughly right in that same range as Ashton Gentry. And, you know, I've talked a lot about things I've gotten wrong, but now it's time for a Herms dub. And this was definitely one of those ones, because my big concern was pretty much everything we've seen from the Texans offense, right? The offensive line complete overhaul was kind of a ballsy thing to do. It's going to be interesting to see how CJ Stroud is able to perform with a completely reworked unit. They added a ton of extra weapons, and we are kind of seeing the ball get distributed very bizarrely. Even Dalton Schultz is starting to take a step forward after not being aggressively relevant the year prior. And he was being ranked above where he finished in PPR points per game the year before, and now we're kind of seeing it. The offense is really mid. It's not going super well, and you know, it's like with Gentry, I think Nico Collins is a very good football player. I'm just not really sure if the Houston Texans right now are a really good football team, and I think that a lot of people probably should have taken that a little bit more into account in the preseason.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm with you. I was lower than consensus on Nico. I don't really have him anywhere. I'm like on the dynasty teams where I got him, but he was not a guy I was drafting. I'm sure we could drum up me on tape saying like, hey, he's like an end of the second round pick for me. And some people wanted him at the beginning of the second or right at that turn. So don't have any Nico. Was 100% with you on that one. Another win before I get into a wide receiver loss. I mean, it's got to be a Mecca Igbuka for me. I was pounding the table for this guy. I had him ranked above Travis Hunter for the majority of the process. He was my wide receiver 2 going into the draft. And he was a guy in dynasty drafts. I mean, he was my most drafted rookie this season. And for that to be a first round pick says a lot. I was getting him at the 107, 108 every single time. I was seeing the Ibuka drop to the end of the first, beginning of the second round in rookie drafts. I mean, I was moving him up the ranks higher than most people were. For me, he's a guy I drafted everywhere in dynasty. I drafted everywhere in redraft. Like, I was telling people, I have like friends. I have receipts like on my phone. I'm texting my friends. They're like in the 7th, 8th round. And I'm like, who should I draft? I'm like, dude, Mika Ibuka is still on the board. I was like, get him right now. They're like, are you sure? I'm like, yes. And now they're hitting me like, oh, I'm in first place, dude. Like, Ibuka's been killing it. Like, dude, man, that one felt good, because I was even a little low on him, because I was like, you know what? I don't know if he's got like a top 5, top 8 ceiling in him. But I know he has it in him to be a top 24 wide receiver. As somebody who drafted a lot of Igbuka, who was definitely on him, who had him ranked higher than the consensus, I'd certainly feel that even I was a bit low. I mean, everyone was probably a bit low considering what we've seen through half the season. Does he come back down? Oh, yeah. It's possible. But at the same time, man, it's hard not to victory lap Igbuka when you're just pounding the table for him and you have him ranked above Travis Hunter.
No, definitely. And he's one of those guys that has actually kind of ended up as an interesting Herms L. It kind of ties into our conversation from before about Jackson Dart. I know I've mentioned this to you personally. I think I've also mentioned it in the chat. Shout out the happy hour. We have fun here. But because I took so much Jackson Dart where he was going in those rookie drafts, I ended up with 0% in Mika Igbuka. I didn't end up benefiting at all. And I feel like I'm so glad that I have Jackson Dart on a lot of these rosters. Do not get me wrong, but man, wouldn't it be nice to just have even one share of a Mika Igbuka? That one was such a heartbreaker to me, man. Oh my gosh.
Shifting into something I got wrong, which is a little bit of a heartbreaker, is I was pounding the table this offseason to trade Roma Dunze, get him away. He was done. He wasn't going to be the guy there. That was wrong. He's clearly the alpha there. Now, part of my reasoning for it was I thought everyone was too high in the Bears offense. And through half the season, honestly, that feels pretty good. They're very middling offense, in my opinion, in terms of what they put out. They're not bad. They do well in games where they're supposed to, but they're certainly suspect. And I get it. Like, you know, Caleb Williams is still figuring it out. They got a new system. This is Ben Johnson's first year as a head coach. I'm not writing them off. I think if you're a Bears fan, there's things that you're seeing, especially as of late, that can give you some optimism, right? For certain. Like, they've been putting up at, like, you know, 21 points. So, you know, most games recently, like, they're operating. My issue was A, I was too high on DJ Moore. I'm going to take that out. Like, I don't know what's going on there, but I certainly was team DJ Moore over Roma Dunze, and that does not look good. You know, I thought Burden or Loveland, one of the two, would be a little bit more involved than they are now, and they'd be spreading the ball out a little bit more. So I think for me, I know he was drafted really high. I just thought there's going to be too many mouths to feed. I was right on the side where I didn't think the offense, I should say this, I was right on the side where I think people were too high on the Bears offense, but it is concentrated way more on Roma Dunze, and I did not give him enough credit. So got to take an L on Roma Dunze for ranking him in the 30s. Barring injury, he most certainly is not going to finish in the 30s. So that one was definitely an L, and I'll definitely eat the L on the fade of Roma Dunze.
Yeah, no, I went back and listened to that episode earlier just as I was, you know, preparing for this process. And, you know, I followed a lot of the same logic. I was also very skeptical. And, like, my biggest thing, the argument that I was kind of leaning into was the fact that it's like, well, I mean, they drafted Colston Loveland and Luther Burden with two of their first picks. And how could they add two pass catchers? And that really did not seem to matter. I mean, now, Luther Burden should probably be a little bit more involved. Not to go on too big of a side tangent, but Olamide Zaccheaus, why are you still out there? Why are you still doing this, brother? I just get this man out of regular rotation. Put in the rookie. He's clearly more explosive, but that's a different thing. But even then, Colston Loveland, he didn't really start elevating his playing time a ton onto a meaningful level until very recently, and that was because Cole Kmet got hurt. So the entire basis for me being out on him was just, you know, completely just baloney as well. So that's one, you know, good for Rome truthers, good for the people that held on to those shares and didn't flip it. Cause like, man, you're being rewarded just out the wazoo if you held on. But I became pretty skeptical too. So I definitely feel you there. I will say though, one of the things that did go pretty well for me, and one of the things that I am, I'm not thrilled that a player is not good. I mean, I would prefer it if Marvin Harrison Jr. was a little bit better, but this Arizona Cardinals offense and the concern specifically with Kyler Murray bothered me a ton. Now, there was also the whole Trey McBride-sized elephant in the room. It's hard to be a huge alpha receiver if you have one of the very rare, huge alpha tight ends also in your offense. But, I mean, even we're seeing in the past couple weeks in which Jacoby Brissett has been under center, the passing game is improving a little bit more. Things are starting to be a little bit more promising from that regard. And I think that it really just speaks to kind of the overall problem of, like, yes, McBride taking a ton of looks away is a huge issue, but that was not really something that people were very surprised about. But I'm also prepared to say, as part of this sort of dub that I am claiming on this, is that, like, I am so over the whole Kyler Murray thing at this point, man. Like, there were people who talked me into sort of buying low in Dynasty, maybe, like, you know, like a year ago, a couple summers ago, like, there was an argument for it for sure. But I got out of that business, and I'm really glad I did, because I think that's ultimately kind of the reason this isn't working out. That, and also offensive coordinator Drew Petzig, dear God, this offense is boring as hell. We need somebody else in there.
You're not wrong, man. And you really nailed it, because I think that same episode I talked about being at market with Marv. So I wasn't high on Marv. I actually don't have much Marv at all. Actually, I don't know if I have any Marv. But that's not – I think it's more of chance than me purposely fading him. And you were – crazy low at the time on Marv, and that's looking brilliant at the time. So great call there, Herms. You want to, let's close things out and do a little tight end talk maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have like a ton of big tight end talk, but one of the bigger things that I did sort of plant my flag on like a little bit was I was very skeptical about TJ Hockenson. And my main argument for that was probably one of my other really, really big W's, in that I thought Jordan Addison is just really that good. I really thought the Vikings passing attack was going to be predominantly through Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. I dropped a bunch of stats in that episode. if people want to go back and listen to it, for sure. There's also, I also brought it up in a couple articles throughout the website as well. You can just look up Herms. You can find the different places that I talked about Addison. But like, that was my big thing for TJ Hockenson. I got the argument for it. I even understood being big on the Vikings offense as I was, and but just not so much in his department. So that for me, I think, is the only one that I can really claim as like a big tight end take that sort of ended up in a sort of dramatic way.
Yep, that's fair. So, I mean, I think I do want to own this is in the earlier draft process, I was Loveland over Tyler Warren, which hurts really bad. That's an L and I will eat that one. That was, I got too much into the spreadsheets and not just the fact that Tyler Warren was a dog. So I apologize if in your rookie drafts or those earlier drafts, you might've taken Loveland due to me telling you so. I hope you didn't, but I will admit I did come around in the summer and did rank Tyler Warren ahead of Loveland in my redraft ranks. I did do it way more Tyler Warren in best ball, but I'd certainly, I had a rookie draft in April and I literally was looking down the barrel of Loveland or Warren and I clicked Loveland's name over Warren and it's 8 weeks, man. And that does not feel good. A lot can change, but like I don't see how I come back from a Loveland over Tyler Warren take, man.
Dude, is Tyler Warren is an absolute dog. This entire Colts offense is just completely unbelievable. I've been very impressed with what they've been able to do so far to start this season. I think a lot of people were very wrong on a lot of the Colts stuff, but like there were definitely reasons for sure. Yeah, no, I'm with you though. Tyler Warren, completely unbelievable.
I'll close things out here with like my last tight end here with the win. It's got to be Tucker Kraft, man. You know, I wrote an article about how he's one of my highest or most rostered best ball tight ends. I think I said literally Tucker Kraft is one of my favorite mid-round tight end targets, especially in best ball formats. I mean, those best ball articles. So, of course, I said that. Talked about him flashing after the catch, his physicality, his red zone chops. You know, I literally ended the little piece off with saying I'm comfortable with Tucker Kraft as my tight end one. Which at the time was a little bit hot because he was more so seen as like, oh, take Kraft and this player, see what happens. But he was kind of one of those players, one of the last players, I'll say, but one of those players where I was like, if I take Tucker Kraft, I feel comfortable rolling him out rest of the season. And damn, that one looks good right now.
I can attest, listeners, this man has always been about that Tucker Kraft life. He has been such an interesting piece of this Packers offense as they continue to grow. They were a team that I wrote about a lot throughout the summer as a team that I thought could take a really big step forward. Now, I did identify Matthew Golden as the piece that would potentially unlock the whole thing. And you know, that hasn't quite worked out. There's still a little bit of time left, so I'm not going full L on that one. We still have some season to go, but maybe not quite for that reason. The reason was basically just Tucker Kraft being an absolute dog, as you said. I think that player is just unbelievable. I wish I had more. I really wish I did.
I mean, that's all I got here for our look back. I mean, I could talk all day about some wins and losses, but as I was kind of going through my notes and going through my ranks, you know, those are the kinds that stuck out the most. Yeah, we have half a season left. But again, it's always good to kind of look back, see what we said, where we won, where we lost, and look at where we lost and, you know, try to learn from that and grow as analysts so we can just keep delivering better content and help you, the listeners, continue to win your leagues and hopefully championships.
For sure. And listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please reach out to us. Let us know maybe perhaps about some of your biggest dubs, maybe some of your biggest L's. We'd love to hear from you. Anytime you have questions, you can always hit us up on the FTN Discord. But otherwise, we have this podcast. You know when it comes out. We both have articles coming out on the website all the time, ftnfantasy.com. Go check all that stuff out, all the wonderful stuff we have over there. And that brings us to the end of the episode. We will talk to you all again next week, getting into some week 9 stuff as per usual, et cetera, et cetera. My name is Herms. His name is Tyler O. And we will see you later. Goodbye!
Think about how far we come just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late.